you heard a bit of what Steve was saying anyway, and he was saying, you know, it's not just the men that are the predators, and we need to protect everyone and take it all seriously, which...
Well, he's correct there. I'm just going by my personal experience, and from what I read, it does tend to be men are more likely to sexually abuse. But Stephen did make a point there. It's more physical, personal, and psychological abuse women engage in. It seems to be, you know, you can correct me here. You know, men are more likely to be sexual predators than women. But there has been, at a personal capacity, I know of people who've been sexually abused, and it was by men. I have heard out on the ground cases of where a woman, and I don't personally know it, so these perverts, you know, it's a very serious issue, you know, when it comes to a woman sexually abusing, she's definitely depraved. Should not be let near children. Imagine engaging with an underage.
Yeah, and
a boy under the age of 18.
Just to point out, I suppose, look, to go back to Ian's original point, like he was 17, going out with a 25-year-old, so over the age of consent. And a lot of what we've been talking about around Ian's situation is, you know, we're not talking underage, we're talking older age, but it's still people see it as sleazy, people aren't comfortable with it, that kind of stuff. No one is condoning anyone engaging in any sexual activity with someone who is under the legal age of consent. And I just want to make that really clear.
Oh, yeah, Brand, I reckon people, I wouldn't, I'm not saying I just didn't hear, but like, you know, when it's much older women and they're preying on young lads,
there's
something not right there.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
I think a lot of people would agree with you, Marion. Can you guys, look, I'm really sorry, I'm so over time for news, and I know it's like my last night, my last hour, but I still don't want to get thrown out. So thanks a million for all your comments so far. Just bear with me, I'm just going to have to break quickly for the news. This is Nighttime Talk on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio. You can text at any time and get involved on 087-188-0008.
Nighttime Talk. Call us now on 0818-942-105.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio. Damien Farrelly in the afternoon.
Weekday afternoons from 2. Please join me for the latest trending stories. If you love your nostalgia, it's a bit like reeling in the ears on the radio. We call it Back to the Future. There's over €2,000 to be won if you can tell me what Lucy Kennedy said to Colm Hayes. Plus, only top tunes from the 80s and 90s.
Weekdays from 2 p.m. with Tesco. Feel the power to lower prices with your Tesco Club card.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Every new morning embraced. Every daily tradition continued. Every extra candle lit. Every new challenge accepted. And every obstacle overcome. Every moment is precious. That's why Breakthrough Cancer Research funds research into better, smarter and kinder treatments. Because every breakthrough brings us closer to 100% survival for 100% of cancers. Donate today at breakthroughcancerresearch.ie.
Hi, it's Dee here from Strip and Dip. I can't believe we've been stripping and dipping for 11 years now. This year's Strip and Dip is on Saturday the 8th of June in Wicklow, all in aid of our ongoing commitment to Aveen's Pink Tie, Ireland's national children's cancer charity. Ladies, let's get over 1,000 of you on the beach. Let's celebrate and participate on what will be one of the best days of your life. That's Saturday the 8th of June in Wicklow. Register now at stripanddip.ie. Join us, warrior women. See you on the beach. 8th of June, stripanddip.ie.
Fight like a child.
You're listening to Nighttime Talk
with recruit.ie,
Ireland's new online job search.
Search for your dream job today on recruit.ie.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio. Nighttime Talk. Call us now on 0818 942 105.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Hi, I'm Megan Scully, and this is Crack August Kjol on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Emile Amigad Nocha Tho, 4 months and two album of Billy Ray Cyrus. August Vian Thauron, Achy Breaky Heart, Le Fall Air. Don Shea bore on Billboard, Rochaid, Erfa, Shach Zeg Shachtana. Freshen, Emile Amigad Nocha Tho, Rogan Thaurani, Sam Smith in London. Emile Amigad Octo Hoch, 4 months album, Ever It's Eh, Owen Thaurani, Prince. I'm going down. Ola Sashe, Vui Lordi on Eurovision. Isas on Inlan Atoshi. That's Crack August Kjol on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Across Cork, Limerick, Clare and Galway.
On your phone.
And on your smart speaker.
This is the home of the 80s and 90s.
This is Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Good evening, I'm Aidan Delaney. The Cabinet's approved the Health Minister's proposal to increase the legal age for the purchase of tobacco to 21. Stephen Donnelly says it's a tough measure and Ireland is leading the way in trying to reduce the number of young smokers.
My guess is other European countries will follow suit. We know that this will work in bringing the amount of smoking down, and every reduction we can get in young people smoking, the reality is that's lives saved in years to come.
Almost 7 in 10 LGBTQ plus people in Ireland were bullied because of that in school. Research by the EU Fundamental Rights Agency found over a quarter of Irish people had experienced some form of conversion therapy. The agency's director has written an open letter urging member states to step up over an alarming increase in violence. Paula Fagan is the CEO of LGBT Ireland and says to see Ireland's reporting rate above the EU average was welcome.
To see people reporting physical and sexual attacks, but what we want to see is those attacks decreasing rather than increasing. And year on year now, with the guards are publishing their hate crime statistics, we've seen an increase in hate crimes in Ireland.
The US Secretary of State Anthony Blinken says what Russian President Vladimir Putin has destroyed in Ukraine, Moscow should pay to rebuild. The American diplomat has been meeting President Zelensky during a surprise visit to Kyiv, telling him military aid is finally on the way. It comes as the country struggles to hold back a major Russian incursion near the city of Kharkiv. And French authorities say hundreds of police officers have been deployed after an inmate escaped during an ambush on a prison convoy in Normandy. The attack happened at a motorway toll station near Rouen. Two guards were killed and three others were injured as gunmen helped drug dealer Mohamed Amra make his getaway. The Justice Minister Eric Dupont-Moretti has vowed to find them.
Absolutely everything will be done to find the authors of this heinous crime. They're people who think that life doesn't matter. They will be arrested, they will be tried, and they will be punished.
And that's your news for now.
Ireland's weather.
With McCarthy Insurance Group. For better value, home, farm, motor, life, health and business insurance in 2024. MIG.ie.
Scattered showers will continue in the south tonight, but it will become dry with clear spells elsewhere. Lowest temperatures of around 7 to 11 degrees. Europe Today to the home of What Did Lucy Kennedy Say to Colm Hayes? Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Now, Nighttime Talk on the home of the 80s and 90s.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
I cannot believe we're into the final hour of night two of me being here already. I've had so much fun, and I said it earlier on, I'll say it again. You've made me feel so very welcome on Nighttime Talk, so thank you so much for all the messages and all the chats. It's been great fun. Still loads to come in this hour, and if you want to get involved and we have a bit of time at the end, I believe you're just allowed to come on sometime. You know, sometimes Niall would say, like, just text, let me on. So if you want to do that, 087-188-0008 if you want to come on. Like the last topic, wow, like there was just so many messages on that, and I'm so sorry we had to cut it short. But I said at the start of the show, we need to talk about the portal. So this is why we can't have nice things, because we just ruin them, right, on ourselves. But the portal, the Dublin to New York portal, was back up and running. Apparently it's been shut down again, okay? The live stream, if you haven't heard of the portal, like, where have you been? Because it's just all over the news today. This art installation which connects Dublin and New York. And it's not the first ever. I think there was a London-New York one at one time. There was a one in Poland and Lithuania at one time. And, like, they all handled it like mature adults, okay? But no, we cannot handle a portal because we can't, you know, have TV screens. You see it on the news all the time. Like when there's a reporter out on a street in Dublin with a microphone, there is always some idiot goes up behind and like shouts something or flashes, or it's just, there's always something bonkers going on. We can't be trusted. And the proof is in the pudding with this portal. They've had to shut it down. This is my favourite headline. Bare breasts and 9/11 taunts. Why the Dublin New York portal was taken offline. In our defence, the bare breasts were at the New York end, right? She's an OnlyFans. We talked about OnlyFans last night, actually, if you remember. She was an OnlyFans model, so they weren't the worst breasts you've ever seen in your entire life. But the 9/11 taunts, I think that was a bit grim. Like, come on now, we're better than that. There was someone else apparently grinding up against it and had to be taken away by the guards. If, like, there's been so many. So if you wouldn't mind texting me in, we are going to speaking to a journalist in a few moments. Jane is just getting her on the line from the States, by the way. So that's very exciting to be speaking to someone international tonight. Do text me in 087-188-0008. Did you go and see the portal? Were you allowed to see it? Do you think maybe, and I'm not suggesting for a moment that this was a bad idea of where it was, but do you think maybe we perhaps got the portal in the wrong place, that maybe we should have thought about it a bit more about where we might have put the portal? So obviously I'm in Dublin tonight, but you're also listening in Galway, Limerick and Cork as well. So if you have any ideas on where possibly we should have put the portal, might have been a better idea, please do let me know where you think it would have been better placed. 087-188-0008. Like, it is a bit embarrassing that they had to cut off the stream. And I know not everyone in New York was well behaved either, but it is kind of, you know, it is kind of on us that it got shut down. So it's North Earl Street, I think. Yeah, just off O'Connell Street. I can't read out exactly what this text message says, but the general consensus from what I can see is that it wasn't the best idea. Someone else agrees. Location, location, location. So where do you think they should have put the portal then? Where do you think, like, there's so many gorgeous places in Ireland and like fun places a bit out there. Like, there's so many reasons why tourism is huge here and so many incredible places off the beaten track. Like, maybe your local town or village like has a really nice spot. They could have put the portal there. Like, there's a funny fella lives down the road from you. They could have got him up there for an hour or two. Would that have been a better idea? Because I think if we don't fix this quickly, we'll never be allowed like a portal again. So apparently it was back up and running a little earlier on today. It's since been shut down again. So let me know what your thoughts are on the portal and whether or not we should be allowed to have it back up and running. 087-188-0008. I'm joined now by Kelby Vera, who's a senior reporter at the Huffington Post. She writes about the nexus between entertainment, politics, technology and internet culture. Kelby, you're very, very welcome to Nighttime Talk tonight on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio. Thanks so much for coming on.
I'm so happy to be here.
Kelby, I mentioned there that this portal between Dublin and New York, it's not the first of its kind. There has been others and they've been relatively successful, I believe.
You know, this one seems to be a little spicier than the ones before. Like you said, there was one in connecting Lithuania to Poland. And I think the locations of those maybe made them a little more mellow. Two of them were situated within churches. But out in the public, we had a different story.
Okay, within churches. Like, do you know what? I think there's lots of people that wouldn't agree with that. But yeah, I love how polite you are and that you said it was just a little bit spicier. Here on North Earl Street in Dublin. I think initially it seemed to be going really well. I was first aware of it because I saw someone on Instagram in New York putting up a video, like an Irish person waving at people in Dublin, and it looked so cool because there's obviously so many links between Dublin and New York. So initially it seemed to all be going very well, Kelby.
From what I understand, it was going pretty smoothly, and you know, officials on both sides say that the people who were badly behaved were a very, very small minority. But it's another case of a few people ruining it for everyone. And as you said, an hour ago, the portal in Dublin was turned off, and they're working on adjustments to make this a more appropriate event. But they still haven't come to a solution.
How does it work, Kelby? Is it live all the time when it is turned on?
It is. It is a 24/7 live feed. So that's also a lot of content to moderate if someone was trying to keep out for the naughty bits. And because of that, you know, you're getting people going in their morning commute. You're getting people after the pub and or after a bar visit. And so it's really a diverse, I mean, it reflects the diversity of both cities and just of life in general.
I'm sorry now, I probably should know this, but what is the time difference between Dublin and New York?
Between Dublin and New York. So I'm in Los Angeles. I believe it is 5 hours between you.
Okay, okay. Dublin is 5 hours ahead of New York, and then you're another, how many hours behind New York are you?
Another three.
Okay. So sorry, I'm really mortified now that you're in LA and you're writing about this. So this has gone everywhere.
Everywhere. Oh. It's even made it out to the West Coast. And it's really a testament to social media. Like you're saying, you saw it on Instagram. There's obviously a ton of memes coming from it as well. But as soon as people started catching wind of some of the debauchery, it kind of caught on like a wildfire.
And you know what? Look, there's always going to be people who kind of push the boundaries a bit, have a bit of fun with it. And that's OK. But I suppose what's not OK is, like I mentioned, the 9/11 taunts. I thought that was just grim. There was a few other symbols and things shown up. What has the reaction been like that to that stateside?
You know, again, people are really trying to make a point that this is a small minority of people interacting with the piece, but shocking stuff is often what people gravitate towards. I think a lot of people, especially New Yorkers, they have thick skin, so they're not clutching their pearls or anything, but it can be triggering, especially at such a devastating event for the city of New York. Obviously, we don't want to make fun of that or poke light at that.
Absolutely not, no. And like, look, like there was a proposal like that, and I can't believe how well that was executed. Do you know a bit about the backstory to that?
You know, I'm not sure about the proposal. I do know that it is a piece from an artist. Portals.org is the sponsor, and they have a really utopian view of what they wanted the piece to be, something that would bridge a united planet. But we got all sides of people with the displays we saw on both sides of the portal.
Portals.org. And I wonder, Kelby, is it recorded? Like, is there someone like watching back the footage being like, oh, here we go?
It's unclear, but at this time, there doesn't appear to be anybody monitoring it. Now, with the changes that Dublin City Council said that they wanted to make, there could be some more intervention, but they didn't really share details on how they're going to adjust the feed or what technology they may use in order to censor or, you know, clean things up a bit.
I have two suggestions, right? The first most like practical one, I think, is that they, I don't know if, I presume you had Big Brother in the United States. Like it was such a huge phenomenon in Ireland and the UK, Big Brother on Channel 4. Like just do it like they did Big Brother, like maybe have a slight delay on it so that there is someone in an editing suite that can kind of block out any content. Like, you know, here in radio, like we've got a dump button. So like you can kind of like delete as you go if you need to, and it sets things back. Surely there's someone in a very swanky editing suite that can do that with the portal feed.
I mean, it feels like an easy technological fix and probably is something that the Dublin City Council is looking into to remedy some of the less appropriate things we're seeing.
In terms of it being in New York, are the Americans happy with where it was placed in New York? Like, is it, I don't know New York, but is it in a fairly like central part of the city where there's a lot of footfall?
It is in the Flatiron District, which is a really well-trafficked area. And again, lots of different people going in to do business and work, some tourists and visitors, good food to eat in that area. So you've got a really diverse mix of people walking past it. I also note some people were seeking it out. Some people were trying to avoid it after hearing what was going down. So big mix again.
And do you think Americans are happy with kind of where it was placed in Ireland? Because like, look, I think, to be fair, Dublin's great, but there's lots of other amazing places in Ireland. Would Americans have preferred to see another part of the country?
You know, I think connecting to urban spaces was a really big goal of this, but there's so much beauty in Ireland. I think showing off some of those things would have been really, really important and valuable to some Americans. So, but as you said earlier, there are so many amazing places, it would be hard to choose.
Have you ever been over here, Kelby?
I've not.
You've got to come and see us. I promise, like, people won't be flashing you and, like, behaving the way they were in the port. Like, we're really nice.
That's so funny. No, as you said, it's location, 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 right?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, it has been kind of an interesting couple of days with the Portland Place. Now, I've been asking our listeners to get in touch and tell me where you think, you know, the portal should be. So if you haven't, do text in and let me know, 087-188-0008. Now, I did mention, Kelby, that the Americans are not getting away with this. Like, you did have an OnlyFans model flashing her boobs in New York. So do you think the Irish or the Americans are just as badly behaved as the Irish when it comes to this portal? Or are we just getting a bit more bad press?
I think you're getting examples on both sides, and especially, you know, it's a push and pull. Once someone sees something, they're going to react, of course, right? What I'm seeing on both sides is also people have thick skin and are willing to really brush things off and realize that people want to shock and it doesn't need to be taken super to heart.
That's it. And like I was saying earlier on as well, like, you always see it on the news. Like, there's always some idiot walking behind the camera waving or being like, all right, ma. Like, something like, it's just silly. Like, we can't resist. Like, we just have to do it. And then you feel like such a dope afterwards. Like, I think there is people that are going to regret what they did on the portal. And as you said, like, there's been memes made now. It's going to come back and haunt them. Kelby, it's been brilliant having you on Nighttime Talk. Thank you so much for taking the call all the way in LA. I really appreciate it. Kelby Vera is a senior reporter at the Huffington Post. Thank you so much for your time and do come and see us someday.
Yes, thank you so much. This was lovely.
Thanks, Emil. Fair play to Kelby. She wrote a great piece about it on the Huffington Post and you can check it out there. The portal, like, look, it is a bit of a laugh and good to hear the Americans aren't too annoyed with us because, listen, we need them coming over here and spending money this summer, don't we? Where would you like to put the portal? If you think there's a better spot than North Earl Street, do let me know. Peter says, how about putting the portal on the grounds of Trinity College? But what's the story that, like, do only people who go to Trinity get to go in? I suppose, no, you get loads of tourists in Trinity. You see, this is the thing, though, Peter. You just get other tourists. You'd get people from New York waving to people in New York. I think the idea of putting it in an urban area, as Kelby said, is to show life in that area. I don't know. Like, I think maybe, like, put it in, like, a housing estate somewhere. Mayo. Like, where Jane's shouting. Where?
Mayo.
In Mayo. Jane wants it in Mayo. Would you put it in Mayo? But yeah, I just think maybe we needed to think through the location just a little bit better. So do continue to get involved and let me know your thoughts on where we should have put the portal. Bare breasts and 9/11 taunts. Like, I just can't get over that headline. It's so funny. You can text 087-188-0008. Now, for a bit of fun, Jane told me I could basically just invite someone on and talk about something I want to talk about. Not that I haven't wanted to talk about the other subjects, but something a bit fun for a Tuesday night. And I love movies and horror stories and scary things, so I thought I would share with you a few of my favourite scary movies. But what I actually love about them is some of the true stories behind them. So if you're into scary movies, I hope you enjoy this piece. Andy McCarroll is good enough to join me on the line. He is the host of the Extra Vision podcast. Andy, thank you so much for coming on and doing this with us.
My pleasure, Lauren. How are you?
I'm not too bad at all. You host the Extra Vision podcast. I love the name, like, Extra Vision. Like, what an institution.
Yeah, with the legally changed E instead of the X, just to make sure there's no liquidators or auditors looking for any money for me stealing that. So just in case anyone is listening, the legally binding E at the start.
I love it. How long has the podcast been going?
It's been going about 3 years now. And I'm happy to say it is the number one movie podcast in Ireland.
Brilliant. Wow. And I was having a listen to you earlier on. I'll get into what I was listening to a little bit later on. But some great guests, some episodes just yourself, but some great guests as well, contributors. I mean, we do, like, we have such a great relationship with the cinema here in Ireland, you know, and there's so many Irish movies doing so incredibly well this year, and Irish actors really flying the flag as well, which is why we've got to keep those Americans sweet with this portal, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely a good feed into a good horror film, The Portal. I'm sure there's a couple of screenwriters now looking at ideas of people jumping into New York, hopefully doing more than just flash them.
Oh, I love it. Well, look, I asked you to kind of dig into some of the true stories behind some of our best loved horror movies. So, I mean, you take it away. Where would you like to start?
So I think we should start with Amityville, which I think you said is a favourite of yours.
Oh, love it.
Again, this was one that has a bit of everything, and the story, as we'll go on, obviously has really taken with a few people, because there's over 26 films or TV shows based on this story, so it's definitely struck a chord with a few people. What the film is, for those who don't know, it's based on this family who have moved into a house, who have been told there was a murder there. They don't believe it. All this kind of spooky ghosts and goblin stuff starts happening. The true story is actually kind of even more bizarre than the one in the film. In real life, a guy called Ronald DeFeo, he shot and killed six members of his family, his mother, his father, and his two brothers and two sisters at this house. He was convicted of murder. Then this new couple, George and Kathy Lutz, moved in. They got the house for a song, as you would, you know, with six people have been murdered in your house recently. After a few days, they start seeing, like, doors will start locking by themselves. They start hearing voices. He starts waking up. The husband was waking up at 3:15 in the morning every day, and that was apparently the time when the murders occurred. If someone, you know, just for me, if someone tells me when I'm buying a house, six people were murdered here, I don't care how cheap it is, I'm just going to say no. There's also rumors it was built on a burial ground. That was debunked then later on. They left the house 28 days after they moved in, left all their belongings, left everything in it, never went back to the house again. Which, to be fair, they probably should have done before they even moved in the first place.
Yeah, I think I'd be with you, Andy. Like, I just, there's no house in the world, like, no matter how amazing it was, if six people had been murdered. I've got a little clip of the Amityville Horror to play for people. But as you said, like, there is 26 versions of this story or different adaptations. But it all kind of comes back to the same. And it's quite an unusual looking house as well. If no one's ever seen it, if you want to give it a Google, then it is
actually up on the equivalent of Daft, but I can't think of the name now off the top of my head, in America. If the house just sold 2 years ago for $1.5 million. Now, the house looks completely different now. It's got like a little boathouse and everything. I don't care. I'm not moving into a house with six people. I don't care how pretty it looks.
Here's a little clip from the Amityville Horror.
Find a well. It's the passage to hell.
Like, it's hard to know what's going on there, but the music alone, I'm just freaked out. There was a great version came out in the early 2000s with Ryan Reynolds in it. He played George Lutz, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And the family actually sued him, saying, because there's a scene in it where he kills the dog with the axe, and of everything else that happens in the film, they went, no, that didn't happen. I'd be like, yeah, that's the part you need to take umbrage with here.
Do you know whatever happened to the Lutz family? Because is the first movie that came out, was that based on their actual account?
Yeah, that was based on their account as well. There was also, it was investigated by Ed and Lorraine Warren, which anyone who's seen the Conjuring films, that's who their life is based
oh,
on.
Oh, wow, on okay. Action.
So they visited the house, and of course they said, yes, this is full of evil, this is spirits, which, you know, it's in their best interest. They've written about 50 books on the subject and obviously sold the film rights as well. So I'm sure every house they go into, they'll find some sort of spirits in it. But the family moved away. They wanted nothing to do with it. It was the son actually who sold the rights to the story, and he's the one who, you know, took issue with Ryan Reynolds killing the dog. Well, I assume had no issue cashing the check that the production company was nice enough to give them for a story that he, you know, had very little part and apparently very little memory of.
Moving on, Andy, to another movie which I've never seen. It didn't just have a weird backstory. Strange stuff happened on set, and that's The Twilight Zone.
Yeah, this is it's an anthology movie with some of the biggest directors in Hollywood, each kind of doing a scene of it as well. Steven Spielberg produced part of it as well. And why this is bizarre is this is just absolute negligence on the part of Hollywood. Like, it's when you think of all the on-subsequent sets now, how they managed to get away with this is absolutely incredible. What happens is it was a stuntman, or sorry, an actor by the name of Vic Morrow. He's actually the father of Jennifer Jason Leigh, who was in Single White Female and The Hateful Eight. And he was killed as along with two children in a helicopter stunt gone wrong. It was a 7-year-old and a 6-year-old child. And how this came about is director John Landis, who was actually still making films to this day, he had got the family to sign waivers, essentially, because you can't have children working after a certain hour and they can't be involved in stunts. But he signs that he got the parents to kind of pay, you know, cash in hand under the table, never told them anything about the helicopter scene, never told them anything about doing stunts. Went really cheap with the helicopter production company that were going through, that were actually managing the stunt. The helicopter crashed, came down and killed all three actors. Steven Spielberg, who was producer and essentially responsible for running the set, he was very close friends with Landis. He broke off the friendship off the back of that, just said he makes me absolutely sick to his soul how he put those people in that harm's way. And really eerily about this is the actor Vic Morrow. In the film before this, he was making a film called Dirty Mary Crazy Larry, and he took out an insurance policy for $1 million, saying because he was shooting a helicopter scene and that, and he said, I've always had a premonition I was going to die in a helicopter crash. And this is the film before he done The Twilight Zone.
Chills.
Which, you know, if you've seen the TV show, you've seen the film. Now, The Twilight Zone is all based on this kind of, you know, kooky and weird kind of premonitions or coincidences.
Is it kind of like The Final Destinations?
Pretty much. Final Destination is based off this. It's kind of, that was called, you know, a rip-off of Twilight
Zone. Okay. All right. Okay. I get it now. I've never, ever seen The Twilight Zone. I feel kind of bad.
It's not a fantastic film, and especially seeing the back of this. The actual stunt itself, you can actually watch online. There was court documents released from it where you can actually see the stunts where they're killed.
Oh, God.
And he's actually decapitated in that as well. Like, you're watching two children and a man die, of course, out of morbid curiosity. I watched it, not expecting it to be as bad as it actually was, but it's absolutely horrendous. I mean, you still think, like, you know, John Landis is still making films. His career, you know, nothing really happened off the back of that. He's directed films like Trading Places, Beverly Hills Cop, Three Amigos. Like, to be that negligent, to be, you know, he essentially paid off the family, the parents, the children, not to sue, and then just went off and still had a career in Hollywood, like, with no accountability.
You think of today of, like, Alec Baldwin and the fallout of what happened on a set of his movie, and to think that this incredible tragedy occurred on set and nothing ever came of it. It beggars belief. Andy, I'm going to have to take a quick break, but we've got some of my absolute favourites lined up for straight after, so don't go anywhere. And I'm still asking people, I want to know before the end of the show where you would have put the portal, so don't forget to get involved in that conversation. I'm on 087-188-0008. This is Nighttime Talk on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Nighttime Talk. Call us now on 0818-942-105.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Previously on Colm and Lucy in the Morning.
Margaret, are you joking?
No, this is not a joke.
It's not a joke, people.
Colm mightn't like it.
Oh, no. Now you've piqued my interest.
We're thinking, how many times have you dyed your hair?
Hey, back right. off there. Oh, my God. All morning we were trying to get Lucy to laugh. That's all I'm doing.
Margaret wants
Once
to know the truth.
In my life, because of you.
Twice.
Once.
The first time you went orange.
Colm and Lucy in the Morning. Weekdays from 6 a.m. with Noyx Newmans. For your kitchens, floors, decks and doors.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Captains and convicts, saints and sinners, and 1,300 years of Irish history are awaiting you at Spike Island, Cork. Ireland's infamous prison island is just waiting to be explored. So book your adventure for 2024. Spike Island, Cork. Discover it for yourself. Tickets include your ferry crossing, guided tours, and so much more. So check opening hours, plan your visit, and head back in time at spikeislandcork.ie.
Girls, it's time for a Gertie breakaway. At the Talbot Hotel Clonmel, County Tipperary, we've got you sorted. From an unbelievable €139 per person sharing, we've got an all-inclusive girly overnight getaway with breakfast, afternoon tea, bubbles, chocolates, cocktail, dinner, swimming pool, gym and more. Book your perfect girly getaway now at talbothotelclonmel.ie.
Listening to Nighttime Talk
with Recruit.ie, Ireland's new online job search. Search for your dream job today on Recruit.ie.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Hi, you're very welcome back to Nighttime Talk with me, Lauren O'Sullivan. I've been doing a call out for places maybe we should have put the portal rather than North Earl Street. Peter had one suggestion of Trinity College, and then I said maybe not because it would just be loads of tourists. So Peter's come back, thank you Peter, suggesting King Street between the Gaiety Theatre and Stephen's Green. That's a lovely street there. I think that would be a great spot, Peter. So thank you for that suggestion. If you have any suggestions on where we should put the portal, because listen, we're really in the bad books. We had an American journalist on, I think, you know, I kind of taped over it a bit. I think we might get away with it. But listen, we really, really need to think more about the location of these kind of portals going forward. No offence to North Earl Street, but listen, you just didn't represent us that well. So I would love to know around Ireland where maybe you would have put the portal instead. 087-188-0008. Now, we're talking movies and the background to some of the scariest movies you've ever seen. Andy McCarroll joins me on the line. He is the host of the podcast, the Extravision podcast. Sorry, I was about to say the Extravision. What? The Extravision podcast. Sorry, Andy. I'm making a balls of it. but Andy, you have some absolute doozies. We were just talking there about the Amityville Horror and the Twilight Zone, which I'm definitely going to put on my list to go and watch. You were saying it's kind of the original of the Final Destinations, which are just so terrifying. What I love about movies based on real stories is that they're actually based on something. Like, I'm not a fan of like the Saw movies because I just think they're disgusting. I'm like, what is this? Like some, like I know maybe you're going to correct me and say they are based on something, but like I remember as well once doing an interview about something to do with the Human Centipede and I was like, what? Like who? No, that's just some freak thought that up and put it on a screen and it's so vile. Whereas these, where there, some horror movies are based on a few different stories or there's different elements and that's what I find fascinating. I'm one of those really annoying people that when I'm watching a movie, I have to Google the end or Google the background to it or where the real people are now. And that's what I really, really love about some of these. So moving on, I think one that a lot of people have heard some of the background to and some of the basis for is the Poltergeist movies. Like I think growing up, we all watched all the Poltergeist movies. I still count Between Thunder and Lightning whenever there's a storm because it's so terrifying in Poltergeist. What is the background to that? And didn't someone die as well?
Two actually died as well. So, and again, just to ruin that, the Human Centipede is very loosely based on a true story that I won't go into the details with on the show now.
There's no Nighttime Talk show late enough for that.
Yeah, the hour hasn't been invented yet where that's after the watershed.
Tell me about Poltergeist.
So Poltergeist, for those who don't know, it's the story of a family who they move into their dream home and their daughter starts being possessed by spirits and starts to torment them. The film is essentially the original version. Well, it's later than The Exorcist, but this was essentially a core set. Now, a lot of The Exorcist, again, kind of like The Twilight Zone, a lot of that can be chalked off to, you know, negligence and the director of that film being an absolute lunatic. This one, I kind of got more of a case of it being coarse. You have Dominique Dunne, the actress who played the eldest daughter in the film. She was actually murdered by her boyfriend at the age of 22. He was convicted only of manslaughter, not murder, because he was declared temporarily insane because he had said that spirits from this film had possessed her and he was essentially trying to save her. Somehow that managed to work in a court, but then again, you know, America. The actress Heather O'Rourke, who played Carol Ann, and she played in actually all three Poltergeist films, she died at the age of 12 due to apparently a bowel obstruction. But again, these are one of those things that, you know, it's not something very often that would happen on a set, especially a 12-year-old. Real skeletons were found to be used in a scene. There was an issue with, again, Steven Spielberg coming back into it. He apparently directed this film and had stolen ideas. The screenwriters had stolen ideas from other scripts that hadn't been developed. There's a scene in this where Jo Beth Williams, one of the actresses, she ends up in the haunted basement. All of a sudden, all these skeletons start popping up that the house is apparently, you know, based on, or sorry, been built on an Indian burial ground. All these skeletons come up out of the water and she's submerged with that. During the case of, you know, the plagiarism, it had come out that there was 13 skeletons that she was in the scene with were actually real. The special effects company had essentially gone cheap. And for some reason, it's actually cheaper for someone to dig up real bodies, clean them off and sell them to production companies like it's, you know, London in the 1700s for medical experiments So this poor actress is submerged in a tank of dirty water with 13 real bodies with her as well, having no idea what was going on. Probably for the best that she didn't know until years later, but not something I definitely think she signed up for.
Oh, so she didn't know they were real skeletons and then found out later?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Like, as if that scene probably wasn't scary enough to film.
Like, I can just imagine, you know, you, as an actress, you're on the film, all this stuff, you know, the girl who plays her daughter has passed away. The other girl who plays her daughter has been murdered. And then later on, you find out that, you know, one of the most terrible scenes in the film, you were actually in there with not one, not two, but 13 actual dead bodies thrashing around in Mulcool with.
And like you mentioned at the startup of the Poltergeist piece there, that like The Exorcist, like they're all kind of connected and they've all had weird things happen. Because look, I mean, the idea of someone being possessed by demons or the devil, like this is something that, you know, we've been talking about for hundreds and hundreds of years. Of course, there's so many movies. You mentioned The Conjuring as well earlier on. Andy, to the best of your knowledge, like which is the original, like the most true to what an actual possession is like? Like what do you which movie do you think best represents all of that?
Apparently, The Exorcism of Emily Rose is the one that's most, I don't know if you've seen that. That is based on a quote unquote true story as well. Well, anyone kind of surrounding that or is when that story, they seem to be the kind of the most well-adjusted, if you can call them that. Everyone involved in kind of The Exorcist or Poltergeist, or even Amityville that we call around, are either people who it's in their best interest to sell this story because they have money involved, they have skin in the game. The Exorcist of Emily Rose seems to be something that this family was genuinely, it was their last resort. This is what we had to do. And this was kind of like a spiritual, therapeutic way of curing someone who had a very real disease. And then off the back of it, seem to actually do well out of it. So it's kind of the only time where you would say, you know, exorcism cured somebody, for want of a better term. And again, anyone kind of, you know, expert in that area seem to say this is the one where, you know, it hasn't gone too ridiculous and it's kind of based more on real life and the events that actually happen. It's more of a kind of a legal drama around the court, the kind of, you know, the ethics of doing an exorcism on a child, or are you basically trying to just, you know, torture them some more, or is it something that can, you know, mentally and spiritually actually help people?
I haven't been able to bring myself to, I'm not great with exorcisms, right? Like zombie movies and exorcisms are just, I'm not able for them, and spirits, right? But the Pope's Exorcist, is that the one that Russell Crowe is in? It's relatively new, yeah, the last few years.
It's him flying around in a Vespa, apparently in Rome, but he goes by Trinity College quite a few times for somewhere that's supposed to be Rome. But that film is just fantastic crack. I don't think there's any sort of realism involved in that as well, right down to Russell Crowe deciding when, you know, certain scenes. I'm going to do an Italian accent now. Now I'm going to be
Australian. Stop, it's the accent. Yeah. I don't think it's the scariness in the movie. It is actually just his accent that is just off the
charts.
That is
probably the scariest thing in the film. I'm doing an exorcism. It's like if Super Mario was trying to, you know, take Bowser out to go.
I love it. Now, one that I initially had forgotten about, and it only came to me about an hour ago when I texted you, were good enough to say that you know about it. And this, I think, is one of my favourites. Again, I've only ever seen it once because it's so scary, but it is something that I'm so fascinated by. And this is the idea of backpackers in Australia. It's Wolf Creek. Tell me the real story behind Wolf Creek, Andy.
Yeah, there's actually two true stories. This, again, like you said, for want of a better term, I was obsessed with this. I was actually backpacking across Australia when I found out this film came out.
Oh,
and
God.
I kind of got the backstory. But it's actually based on two separate instances. There's a murder called Bradley Murdoch and one called Ivan Milat. The Bradley Murdoch one is the one I had notes. A friend of mine that I went backpacking with, we were obsessed with it. We were like, you think we were going to solve the case over there the way we were going on about it. Apparently, there was this English couple, Peter Falconio and Joanne Leeds, were backpacking through Australia. They had stayed in a hostel in the same place where we had stayed in Surrey Hills in Sydney. They took off, they went across. They got pulled over by a guy called Bradley Murdoch, who had said there were sparks coming out of their car. He then pointed a gun at the boyfriend, tied up Joanne Leeds. She managed to escape through her cable ties and ran out through the bushes in the middle of the night. He couldn't find her. He drove off with the boyfriend. The boyfriend has never been found. Then while I was there, there was like a big hullabaloo of the case. Had she faked this whole story? Had she made up everything? But this guy, Bradley Murdoch, was then found. There was blood found from Peter Falcone on this. But still to this day, there's people saying, was she involved in it? Was she not involved in it?
Yeah, I think there was an element of doubt over her story because I think initially they couldn't believe that she had escaped the man who'd attacked her boyfriend, that she went undetected in the bush and she'd survived the night. And I think there was a lot of, because I too, you know, just absolutely, this is one of those stories that I, you know, when people ask you like, what cold case would you love to solve? This isn't cold, I suppose, because Bradley Murdoch did go to prison for it. But it is one of the things I'd love to know what really happened. And I don't think we ever will know, because she claims she doesn't know. But it was that it was so unbelievable that she survived out in the bush. And then she didn't behave the way people expected her to behave in press conferences. And I think this is something we've seen so often in the media, like, you know, Kate and Jerry McCann and... remember the character that Meryl Streep played, a baby took my dingo, like the people like a dingo got my baby, like people just don't like how some women react when they're traumatized. So
for want of a better word, she was a chesty lady, shall we say, and she showed up with like a tight kind of crop top to court one of the days, and it was the front page of the news, like how dare she show up. And this was her wearing a tight top to court was kind of considered, that's it, she's definitely guilty. And it was one of the first court cases I followed. I was like, this is absolutely insane, like how the public perception was shifting kind of week to week depending on what she showed up to court wearing.
Yeah, and she was so traumatised. I've read so many interviews with her, and you know, she obviously like will probably never get over what happened to her. But it led then to the story of Wolf Creek, but you said that's also based on another murder out in the Australian outback.
Yeah, there was another murder called Ivan Milana. This guy we do actually know. He killed, I think it was 9 backpackers. Similar with the same kind of modus operandi. He would approach backpackers either to say they've had car trouble, or if they were backpacking through New South Wales, he'd say, oh, I'm going to wherever you're going, I can give you a lift on the way. What would happen then, he would then attack them, and he would go to the Bilango State Forest, and he would sever their spinal columns. Again, very disturbing, which essentially incapacitates them, and would basically torment them while he was murdering them because they were incapable of moving but could see this coming. He would take sometimes days to torture them to do this. Just an absolute, if you're to look up the real story of this and you see him in court, and even like he was, his last words before he was executed was, you know, I don't care about any of this. He just looks like something out of a Stephen King horror film. If you saw it in a film, you would say he's not believable. He just looks pure absolute evil, like a terrifying monster. Some of the details, again, won't go into too much detail over some of the murders that had happened, like just absolutely frightening, especially when I was over in Australia when you're backpacking, just think like any one of these people. He seemed relatively normal, and again, kind of like with Ted Bundy, that's what really I think intrigues people about these true crime stories, is you look at someone like him and think he looks fairly average. If I saw him on the street, I wouldn't look twice. Like, it's not as if it's, you know, Leatherface or Freddy or Jason, so we look at, oh yes, well, that is clearly a murder, I need to run the other way. He looks like someone who you would talk to at a bar, or, you know, if he offers you a lift, you kind of go, yeah, maybe I might.
And
this.
That's what so many people do backpacking in Australia. And I think that's what's so terrifying about it is, you know, he was convicted of the murder of these backpackers, but there's probably so many more bodies that have never been found. And that's what's so terrifying, is that it is just so vast, and you can really see that in Wolf Creek. Am I right in thinking there's a sequel to Wolf Creek?
Yeah, it's a kind of, again, one of those straight to video sequels that's
enough
not
said.
Particularly based on any of them. Yeah, it's watchable for completions, but it's, for Wolf Creek, I think that got it very realistically to do that. And I think with the casting, they've done it as well. The casting was John Gera as the killer, and he's actually a kind of a really well-known comedian in Australia. It'd be like if you got, you know, PJ Gallagher or Tommy Tiernan to play a serial killer, you think, oh, he won't do it. Well, maybe Tommy Tiernan, but PJ Gallagher, you think, oh no, he's completely harmless. And then you see him like that and go, oh my God, this guy is terrifying.
Wow. This is one I never thought of, but Joan has texted in to say, I'm not afraid of horror movies, but The Blair Witch put shivers through me.
Yeah, I actually have here. One of those films I completely bought into. It was kind of the,
because it was marketed as a true story. Like, I was a teenager when it came out and we were like, this is so real. And then it all turned out to be so fake.
Yeah, you couldn't do it now because, again, I think I had dial-up internet. It took me about 15 minutes and had to make sure everybody was off the phone before I could get onto it. But I had bought, I had a company Blair Witch dossier. I actually still have it here, about the killings. I don't even remember the name of the killer. I think Rustin Parr was supposedly the serial killer that, you know, had committed murders off the back of the Blair Witch. And the actors in that film, they were told not to do any publicity. You know, their families, some of their families were even convinced, like, you know, distant relatives thinking, has Heather actually died? I'm seeing on the news that she's done this. And they called this killed their career, basically, because people thought this was real for so long and wouldn't cast them as that, thinking these were, you know, amateur actors. Even the way that was made, they were given a map and there's, you know, three things you need to do today. And the directors of the film were hiding in the woods trying to scare the bejesus out of them. They didn't exactly know what was going on next either. So their fear lends into it in the screen. You can see, you know, the reason their performance is so good is because the three of them were scared out of their wits half the time.
I think I've saved the best for last. And I mentioned earlier that I was listening to you on my way in on your podcast and an interview you did with Paul Ryder about the Scream franchise. Now, Scream, the very first one came out, I'd say I was maybe 12 or 13. And it was so huge because, like, I grew up watching over the back of the couch when you're not supposed to be watching, when you're being babysat, like the Halloween movies, Nightmare on Elm Street, like, what else am I thinking, what one am I forgetting about, like all the, like, really, like the structure to all the 1970s scary movies, the slasher movies, like there is a formula to them. And what Scream did was bring that into the 90s, and it was so, so huge when that first movie came out, and it has become this phenomenal franchise. I would really urge people to listen to your interview with Paul about it, because you both love Scream so much. And what I never knew until you told me yesterday was that Scream is actually based on a true story, Andy.
Yeah, it's inspired by a guy by the name of Danny Rolling, who was known as the Gainesville Ripper. And what he done, he went on a 4-day murder spree, which led to the death of 5 Florida college students. And how this actually came about was years later, the screenwriter Kevin Williamson was watching an ABC show called Turning Point about this. And apparently he would call the victims beforehand, basically to mess with their heads, and then would, you know, show into the house. I mean, he didn't have the mask, but there was enough in that story about essentially a sorority being tormented and young women being tormented by this serial killer that planted the seed for Kevin Williamson to make Scream. And he said when he watched the show, he was just absolutely terrified and he would sleep with the lights on. And the reason Scream was written so quickly, he actually wrote Scream 1, 2, and 3 over the course of a couple of weeks, because he said he couldn't sleep because it had left such a mark on him that he was like sleeping with the lights on. He couldn't sleep, obviously, because the lights were on, and would just write the whole way through the night. So, you know, there's kind of a makes it very productive to be terrified that someone's going to, you know, break in and murder you. So I've never, unfortunately, not turned that into a film writing career. But mm-hmm. Insomnia has never worked for me.
What was so groundbreaking about Scream as well, and what really got people was, and if anyone else listening remembers it, it was that it was marketed. All the trailers featured Drew Barrymore, who was probably one of the biggest teen Hollywood stars at the time of the first one. And I think it's okay to give away a spoiler at this stage about the first Scream movie, but she dies in the first like 10 minutes. And that shook audiences so much because she was the headline. Like, she was the top billed name on all the movie posters. She was on all the posters and she's gone in the first 10 minutes. It was absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, there was two reasons behind that. And like you said, like, I have the Scream poster here behind me with Drew Barrymore on the cover. The first one was she was originally cast in the Sydney role, the Neve Campbell role, as the main actress. She was then contractually obliged to do another film and had to, rather than drop out, Wes Craven was a friend. She said, is there anything, I'll do the one at the start and we can kind of do it like if anyone has seen Psycho. It's the same thing in that, where Janet Leigh is the big actress in that. She's killed off in the first few minutes. And Wes Craven kind of said, well, if we kill off our main actress in the first 20 minutes, everything's off the table now. And you will think everybody is kind of up for grabs here and could potentially be murdered, which I think it really does that very well. Because usually if you're watching a film, you know, Ryan Reynolds, for example, is in it, you know, where he's going to make it to the end and then everyone else is kind of cannon fodder. Here it was kind of young, up and coming. Courtney Cox was, you know, this was her fourth film off the back of Friends. Skeet Ulrich, Matthew Lillard, David Arquette, they weren't big names. You're kind of thinking, one, anyone could be the killer, and two, any of them could have been killed.
It was just huge. And then Scream 2, I have to say, as sequels go, Scream 2 was pretty good. Would you agree?
I would. I absolutely love that. It kind of gets kind of much maligned, I think. I think that's every bit as good as the first film. I really, really like it. I think it holds up well. The thing I like about Scream films that I think the new ones have torn away from is the murder mystery. The thing I love about that is every 5 minutes saying, oh, he's the killer, she's the killer, he's the killer. And then, you know, no matter who it is at the end, I'll say, oh, yeah, I knew that all along. I think the new films have kind of gone the way of Saw, where it's more gruesome than anything else. And then in that last film where, like, everyone was, like, one of the guys was stabbed 27 times and still ended up surviving to the end, it's kind of taken the pearl out of the film. So there's no sense of danger to them. It's just gruesome. And that's, I think you said with Saw as well, they're not the type of films I like. I like those, you know, semi-realistic murder mystery films.
I have to admit, as much as I love the Scream franchise, I only ever got to the third. I never watched the fourth. Now, well, I'm confused now, which is which. I love the first, love the second. I know exactly which is which there. The third one, I think,
is
Sydney,
set in Hollywood.
Is set in Hollywood, yes, on the set of the movie. And sorry, can we talk about the fact, what is your man? What's his name? He's such a huge actor and he plays the original suspect. Who was the guy that had the affair with Sydney's mom in the very first one, who she had identified?
Oh, Liv Schreiber.
Like, he's in the Scream movies. Like, no one talks about this. So, yeah, the third one is set in Hollywood and he's starring in the movie. Isn't that it? He comes out of it as such a hero.
Well, that's not to spoil it. The second film he's getting, because the original film he was accused of her mother's murder.
That's it.
The second film he is, you know, trying to build a career off the back of it. And the third one, he's just kind of, you know, basically a Jerry Springer style talk show host.
That's it,
and
yes.
That's it. But yeah. Again, that was... That
I didn't get past that one.
You probably jumped off at the right point, because Scream 4 is absolutely terrible. It's this weird... It's shot in a weird kind of digital way where the whole screen looks like it's covered in Vaseline and everything is slightly out of focus. And then you have the kind of the new, the requels or the reboots now, whatever mad term they've come up with, where they're set in the same universe, but they're a reboot, but it's not a sequel. And so they're kind of picking and choosing what films have happened and what haven't. And again, it's just kind of more gruesome and gore as opposed to actual murder mystery.
I've absolutely loved our chat, Andy. Thank you so much for coming on and joining me tonight on Nighttime Talk. If you want to hear more, Extra Vision is the podcast. It's really fantastic. Andy McCarroll is your host. And as I said, you've some great guests there like Paul Ryder, Gordon Hayden, Mike Sheridan, to name but a few. Fantastic to talk to you tonight. Thank you so much for taking me through some of my favourite horror movies, Andy.
Cheers. Thanks a lot, Lauren. It's nice to speak to you.
There's obviously a lot of horror movie buffs listen to this show because we've been getting in so many texts of people's favourite horror movies. I mentioned The Blair Witch Project, The Sixth Sense, Stigmata is another one because we were talking about exorcisms. So loads coming in there. Thank you so much for all your calls and messages over the last two nights. I've had an absolute ball. This has been Nighttime Talk on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio with Lauren O'Sullivan. Who knows? Might chat to you again soon.
Nighttime Talk. Call us now on 0818 942 105.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio. Imagine a night where it all comes together. The 80s, the 90s, and you.
The famous Ireland's Classic Hits Radio listener parties are back this summer.
Bringing together the greatest music and the greatest people. Join your hosts, Colm and Lucy, along with your favourite station presenters for prizes, karaoke, finger food and drinks.
Getting the gang back together this summer in Cork, Galway, Limerick and Dublin.
For details, stay with the home of the 80s and 90s, Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Jobs Expo Cork is back. The leading careers fair in the South returns to UCC's De Vere Hall on Saturday 25th of May, packed with job vacancies and opportunities. Join us on the day and meet some of Munster's leading employers, attend exciting talks and get CV and career advice all free of charge. That's Jobs Expo Cork, Saturday 25th of May at UCC's De Vere Hall. Register for your free tickets at jobsexpo.ie.
Before you buy new tiles or choose bathware for your new home, take a look at what the Tile Factory Ennis Diamond offer. Because as well as a great choice of bathroom, kitchen, wall and floor tiles and a wide range of bathware, we can arrange the best deals from the leading manufacturers and guarantee to beat any quote you bring us. See our price guarantee in store today at the Tile Factory in Ennis Diamond, County Clare, or browse our entire range now at tilefactory.ie.
You're listening to Nighttime Talk
with Recruit.ie, Ireland's new online job search. Search for your dream job today on Recruit.ie.
Ireland's classic hits radio. Nighttime Talk.
Call us now on 0818 942 105.
Ireland's classic hits radio.